Hi again, everybody. John Porteous of the Lovells Township Historical Society here, and you're listening to the Backcast Podcast. Hey, welcome back. After our extended summer holiday, we're back with some more shows for you, and this week we're going to bring you a couple of very interesting young men who are spending their summer up here in the in northern Michigan. Hunter is working with Steve Sendick doing habitat restoration and installation on the North Branch, and Logan is doing trout telemetry studies with Mark Luddington. So not only are they having a blast hanging out in the shop, but they're doing some really great work for the river too. So without further ado, let's find out what they've been up to. Hey again, everybody, it's John and Richard, and we've got a couple of very cool young men with us today. Richard, would you like to introduce our guests?
Yeah, we're back in the North Branch Outing Club, and if you've been in here in the last couple of weeks or months, I guess, geez, time's flying, you've probably met Jeff and I'm looking at a piece of paper that says Jeff on it. Logan and or Urich working with us this year. Our college students are in the staying in the house and working in the shop this year. And Logan, you're with Mark Luddington on his river, doing a river project, and you're with our good friend Steve Sendick.
Yep, and I do
on his river project.
Stream restoration.
So, cool.
Why don't you, Urich, go ahead and start.
All right. So, yeah, I've always been in the area. I grew up in Mayo, so I started fishing the mainstream of the Isabel below the Mayo Dam, and that's where I, you know, caught my first trout, walleye, bass, you name it. And I ended up using the watershed for bird hunting too. My dad got me into the outdoors pretty young. We always had some bird dogs hanging around, mostly for upland, you know, grouse and woodcock was
sure.
The main thing. We never got into duck hunting, but yeah, so I ended up graduating from Mayo, worked some odd jobs, did skilled labor, and just recently in the past 2 years met up with Steve Sendick, who was a biologist for a long time, and he sort of inspired me to pursue the fish and wildlife area.
Excellent.
Yep, and now he employs me to operate a chainsaw and cut down trees and make fish habitat. So,
well, I was going to say we'll circle back on that because mm-hmm. there's a lot of cool stuff happening that way.
Oh yeah.
And Steve's a good mentor to have. The Logan, how about you?
Hey everybody, my name is Logan. I grew up in Ann Arbor. I went to high school there, and I ended up going to Grand Valley State University for Division II pole vaulting. Student athlete. I really, really enjoyed my time at GVSU. I originally went for business and I didn't like it too much, so I ended up taking a geology course about the Great Lakes. And I sort of found the content of the course like challenging and less like homework.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, it was pretty sweet.
It, fun, yeah.
It was pretty sweet. So the homework became like a challenge and I was really interested in it. So then COVID happened and we went home and I started, you know, talking to advisors and, you know, doing things over COVID. I went on vacations and visited a couple places and found a great fascination and great ability with the outdoors. I mean, I'd been fishing since I was 4 and doing outdoor stuff, playing in mud when I was 5, 6, super young. But I just found a great fascination with the management of it. So I started doing natural resource management, and then I picked up a biology minor and a GIS certificate for spatial analytics, spatial statistics. And then between those three things, I found my way to the Anniswater Resource Institute, where I initially got turned down because I'm not the student that most of the other students there are, you know. And then I met Mark, and Mark liked what I had to bring to the table in terms of like my ability to track fish, and find fish. And he hired me in as his intern. And now I'm here to track, 25 radio tag brook and brown trout in the North Branch of the Isabel.
And you've been able to leverage your GIS experience with that, have you not?
Yeah, so because I have the GIS experience, I can make the maps and statistics of where the fish are going, and specifically in relation to with the temperature, because we've been having higher temperatures on this, you know, every branch of the river, specifically this branch of the river, and we're curious what that's going to mean for the fish. So I'm studying specifically this portion of the North Branch because of the available groundwater, leading to, you know, it's a naturally colder section of the river. So we're figuring if we tag fish here, If there is a big fluctuation in the temperature change, where they move and why they move will have bigger implications of what's going on and how we can manage these fish with these new temperatures.
Are you guys, and again, I don't want to dive too deep because I'll circle back some more, but is the flow from the springs that feeds the north, do you find that to be fairly consistent?
So I don't know too much specifically about the actual flow, like the measurements.
Okay.
But from what I've perceived is that there's this consistent groundwater that comes out year round. So in the wintertime, it comes out and it's very warm. It's 54, which makes it so that the cold water of the river doesn't freeze up. So we have that. It's actually warmer in the winter and then it's colder during the summer, which gives us a dual purpose and dual role. But the groundwater is consistently colder than what is of the watershed of the Ensemble North Branch.
Right. Awesome. Well, Hunterwood, what's a day in the life like with Steve right now?
Well, it's hard to keep up with Steve. Being like
old
dude, he likes to definitely show us off whenever he can. But coming from a family of loggers, he definitely gave us a lot of good saw training from the start. Like, we've never had accidents, you know what I mean? So we're on the saws pretty much every day, cutting down whatever dead or dying trees that we see could look good in the river. And there's a plan basically for each section of river that we plan on doing the restoration work in. So like right now we have 108 structures, I believe, in about a 5 to 6 mile stretch.
Okay.
And so like we look at the plan, you know, in the morning we decide what we can get done today and sort of stage out our tools and come up with a plan, and then we knock out 10 hours worth of hauling wood into the river, basically.
Right on.
Yeah.
No, is this the upper part of the river, the northern part of the North Branch?
Yes, we're upstream of Twin Bridge right now.
Okay.
Specifically, Sheep Ranch.
Okay.
Is about where we are.
Kind of the start of the flies only?
Yeah. Yep, exactly. Okay. Right, yeah, right on the edge of it. So.
Beauty.
Yeah, it's cool.
That's some nice water, too.
It is. It's beautiful. Clear.
Yeah.
And you can see just about everything that's there,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, they can see you, too.
Exactly. They know how to hide.
Yeah, they do. But, again, that's, you know, the structure that you're putting in is,
mm-hmm.
you know, incredible. And, Logan, you're building on a couple of years worth of work that Lutton's done here on the north. Is that, do you have some historical context that way, or is this just pretty much starting fresh for you?
So I'm starting fresh in terms of what I'm researching. So the what I'm measuring when I'm finding the fish and why I'm finding the fish is different from what Brian previously did in the 2013 study.
Okay.
So he studied pretty much all of the patterns of the fish. Like, where do they feed? Why do they feed? Where do they live? Why do they live there? The measurements of the wood that might be in the water, right? The circumference, the speed of the water, the depth of the water, the temperature of the water. I don't think they counted bugs, but they measured everything up to that. And then what I'm studying is, you know, I have access to that and I can read it and learn about it. So I understand how the fish work and why they work. But what I'm researching specifically doesn't much relate to his study.
Okay, that's fair. So when you're tracking fish, are you guys capturing fish and putting a little radio tag on them and then using a directional antenna to track them?
Yeah, so what we do is we go out with backpack shockers. They run about 2 to 2.5 amps. 2.5 would be the higher end, and about 200 volts. They're backpack shockers. They're pretty old material. They're very well used and they still work very well, but they let out a field. There's pretty much a strand that comes off the back and you walk around with a handheld wand. There's a button on it and you click it and it shocks for about a 5 foot radius around where the wand is at. So we go up to structure and we shock for fish, and then we take them back and we have a live well tank set up in the river. And in the river it's like one of those big tubwares, but we've cut through the sides and stapled and glued on mesh so that the river can flow through and we can keep the fish in like a live tank.
Okay.
Yeah, so we use the live tanks to as revive tanks as well afterwards. So once we have captured a couple of fish, we put them in the live wells. We throw them in anesthesia. It's basically clove oil, which puts them to sleep. For us, you know, it really wouldn't do much. It's not FDA approved, but you know, for us, it wouldn't do much. But for the trout, it puts them into a sort of sleep, and then we do a surgery on them. We just do like a little two-inch incision in the abdomen, and slide the tracker through the over the rear anal fins, and over there's a bone that you go over and a muscle you go through. I don't remember the specific name of them. And then the tracker sort of inserts into the abdomen, and you can stitch them back up.
Okay.
There's a specific size range of fish that we need to have. So
well, I was just gonna ask. What size are you targeting?
So what we're targeting specifically relates to the trackers that we're using. So the radio signal that is emitted from the tracker, that section of the tag doesn't really change weight, but the battery changes weight. So depending on how many days we want the batteries to last, the weight of the tracker changes, but we can't have the tracker be more than 2% of the fish's body weight.
Looks like okay. An EV fish.
So the tags that we have right now are right about 2 grams, which means we have to have 100 plus gram fish to tag. And then as they get smaller, the survivability gets less. So if we have 100 gram fish, but it's only 7 inches, we're less likely to tag that one than if we have a 10 inch fish that weighs 100 grams.
Yeah,
just
so
because
I was gonna say, what is that, like a 5-inch fish, 6-inch fish?
Yeah, they're not tiny, they're not big though. They're not right. You look at them and you're like, that's a pretty small fish.
Second year, third year fish?
Yeah, just okay. Around that. And we've tagged some that are, you know, 5 or 6 years old, just based on looks. But so surgery, super glue, they get an antibiotic, and then we put them in the revive tank and they swim off. We take them, try and take them back to the structure we found them on.
You've got this piece of water, this section of the river that you've determined is going to be a good place to start your experiments.
Mm-hmm.
And you've captured some fish, you've inserted the tracker. Now, the fish are just swimming around. How are you tracking them?
So each tag has an identification number and a frequency. So I have a channel box, and imagine like a giant satellite magic wand kind of thing, but it's a handheld size, so you know it doesn't take my arm off. But
like walking around with an old TV.
So I'll be walking around and I'll have this. It's got like 6 prongs on it. It's like this huge. It looks kind of like a satellite dish. I look like I'm looking for Bigfoot or something, right?
Yeah.
But I'm walking around and it has this thing called channel scan. So as I walk or float down the river, whatever I'm doing, it will you know, if it goes over a fish, it'll pick up on the frequency of the fish. And then I can adjust once I know the frequency. You know, fish number 11 is within 400 yards of you. It won't tell me that, but it'll give me a beep in a direction. So I'll know it's reading 400 yards. I just got the beep for fish 11. So now I change to the frequency fish 11 would be on. And then I turn down the gain, which is how much radio frequency the receiver is receiving, until I can pretty much get a directional beep. So it will beep in any direction if the gain is high enough. And then as you turn it down, the beep becomes more consolidated, and you can sort of
fine tune it.
You can fine tune it, right? So like there's radial and directional that has to do with. So if I'm in the 400 yard radius and the gain's all the way up, it'll beep in every direction and I'll know the fish is within 400 yards.
Somewhere.
But yeah, if he's in a tree in somebody's belly, or if he's in the lake, who knows? But then I'll turn down the gain, and then I can get it to where I can figure out if he's on the front half of a 6-foot long structure or on the back half of a 6-foot long structure. And I mean, I can get within 6-7 feet of the fish before they take off. I doubt that they'd eat a fly while I was there, but
right.
I can get really close to them and get a really specific location on them for the GPS, you know, for when we're doing the spatial statistics. And then once I find the fish, I get a temperature measurement of where he's at to figure out, you know, maybe he's sitting on a spring or under, you know, it's just colder in this spot compared to this spot.
Do you make notations relative to where that fish's location is compared to where you tagged it and, you know, caught it and tagged it to begin with?
Yeah, so we took waypoints of all the fish when we initially captured them with our electrofishing and stuff
just
like that. So
GPS
we took
coordinates?
Yeah. Okay. So we took GPS coordinates of that, and those will be in as initial waypoints. But usually it ends up showing that comparatively, like, the place where we shock them and where they move, like, they don't move too far. They're within 50 yards there. They move up and down, right? They don't move an incredible amount of distance, which is why the new higher temperature things is we're going to see, will they move a higher distance to go to this spring?
To a cooler spot.
To a cooler, yeah. What's the change here? Like, what are they thinking?
Did you start in an area with a lot of ground springs, or?
So we pretty much started in the location that was easiest for us to perform surgery for the fish.
There
to be
you go.
Safe. Yeah, so we went, we had, right. So my professor has friends and people who live specifically on the stretch that we're working on. So we were able to have dockside access, and that gave us a good spot to do our surgery and our revive and all, you know, everything that we needed to do safely. So for the time being, we're doing it in a manner where it's possible for me and anybody else who's present to learn, to get better at it and improve. And then I'm sure when, you know, the study picks up, or if we need to tag fish a lot faster, there'll be more days where, you know, we might be taking equipment with us down the river to tag fish, because we need to tag fish at a specific date or specific time. But for now, we're pretty much on the educational phase where we're being very safe.
See one, do one, teach one.
Right. Okay. See one, do one, you know, learn this, learn that, learn how to stitch, learn how to anesthetize. But we're in the educational phase.
Yeah. So is this going to run more than 1 year? Is it?
So,
are we going to see you next summer?
Yeah.
What's the window on this thing?
Yeah. So the window on it, there's no specific window of like when we're going to be studying or what we're going to be studying. But there's more of a window on my education opportunity. So this summer, because I'm going to school next year, I can be here as an intern, and it's sort of like a project, and I'm gathering in intel for them. And, you know, back at Annis, I'm Annis Water Resource Institute. I'm collecting information for Mark and for Jake, and for there's other people that we've worked with that are doing other studies on the same fish. I'm just the one that's out here doing the actual tracking and temperature measurements. But for this year, it's like a internship project. And then next year, I'm hoping it'll turn into a grad project where I'll actually be out here studying and tagging fish on my own and sort of just reporting back to Mark as an advisor and less as an educational professor.
So this could be ongoing for a period of years back before the study's actually published.
Right. Well, so the study could take a while. But
the more data, the better. I mean, if you can repeat this season after season, it would seem that would lead to more quantifiable data and hard science.
Well, especially like what you find out this year could dictate the plan for the next year, right?
It could change a bunch of stuff, right? Like I might be tagging fish on the main branch or the south branch. It's, it's wherever the research takes me and whatever I need to do to, like, I really like the education, and I like studying the fish.
I wonder if we're going to be up at Hunter's New Structures.
I think you might find some fish up there. Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. Well, you know, if it's anything like the stuff that they did just upstream of Dam 4 last year, I mean, fish were moving into that within weeks.
Oh, I've seen it within, like, a couple of days. Like, one of our structures that's kind of, like, really popular would be what we call an inverted V, which you take, like, maybe, like, an 8 to 12 inch diameter log, and you cut like a 45 degree angle on it, nail it together, and actually use earth anchors to put it into the stream bottom. And we use a jet pump to actually bury that structure in as far as we can. So when the water rushes over top of the logs, it scours out like a gravel spawning bed.
Okay.
And I've seen it within, like, not necessarily trout sitting on them, but there's suckers up here too.
Sure.
And within an hour of like putting in the structure, working downstream as we came back up to circle back to where we parked our vehicles, we could see fish sitting right in that little blowout area.
Oh, that's awesome.
Catching food. You know, it
sets up a good feed lane.
It does, yep.
Awesome.
It would be nice if we could, have had this kind of data 30 years ago and 20 years ago and 10 years ago and then do it today, you know, benchmark it and then do the follow-ups.
Yeah.
Right.
That may be the value of this, is it provides that benchmark for the future, right?
Yeah.
For these guys' generation, it's going to be awesome. Because they will have
that. Boy, yeah, you're going to, not only that, you're going to need this
data. When they get as old and as crusty as we are,
right.
then you have some hard data.
Things seem to be changing a little quicker now than they were.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm invested in this project, not only for the education and what I'm gaining and what the people of the trout community are gaining, but I also, like, I want to fish for these fish. I want to prolong the longevity of, you know, how long can we keep these fish huge and growing, and can we even just make them bigger? And,
yeah. Well, yeah, I want my kids to be able to trout fish in the Asalva River, too.
Right on.
Eventually, yeah.
Right.
100%.
That's almost the persona of the North Branch Outing Club, is most of the time it's people that come up with their grandfathers and stuff like that.
Yeah, there's a long tradition of that here. I've met a lot of guys who are older than I am or older, and come in here and say, I bought penny candy in there, you know.
Yeah.
I came in here when I was 5 years old with my parents.
Right.
It's fun to be involved at that. You know, you're starting something that does have legs. That's not just here's a 60-hour assignment.
Right.
You're done.
Right. Boots to ground.
Move on to something else. Yeah. You know, you got a stake in it now. You got some sweat equity in it, and you know,
I get to be a part of it. And there's I'm only doing a portion of the study, like the study in whole. When we're performing surgery on those fish, we're also taking fin clips of the fish so that we can do genetic testing before the hot summer and after the hot summer to see what genetic codes are turned on and turned off, so that we can, you know, like, what can we sort of learn from the, you know, what actually happens to the genetic code of the fish when there's these higher temperatures.
That's pretty intense. I like that.
Yeah. So that's being done by another graduate student that Mark has right now. I can't remember her name off the top of my head.
See, more information crusty old guys would like to have.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of irrelevant to me, but...
Nah.
20 bucks a waypoint, right?
Right, right. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, there's your cottage industry.
Now you're talking about different benchmarks.
Yeah. The challenge chapter, we'll have a very rich database at that point. Aren't they the ones that do the...
They do the river guys, yeah.
Yeah.
A great job, too. We have them and sell them here.
Yeah, it's... definitely a good resource to have in your library. Well, Hunter, you mentioned, in addition to your, you know, zeal for fishing, that you managed to find some time to go out and play with dogs and birds.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. my dad, since I was a baby, he's always had dogs of all kinds. He actually had sled dogs even for six or seven years.
Cool.
He had Alaskan Malamutes, you know, stuff like that, and. So we've always just had dogs around, and that didn't last very long. Between the maintenance of having 16 to 20 dogs at a time was extensive.
When you're running a team, that's a pretty high maintenance operation.
A lot of shoveling.
It's a full-time job, for sure. Even in the summertime, you have the four-wheeler, you know, with them out in front.
We've got friends that live over by Interlock, and that they're in their waning days now. The herd's thinned a little bit, I guess. But, it's... The work that they put into it's incredible.
Yep. And then so we transitioned into bird dogs. We had a chocolate lab for a while, and that was when I was younger, so I didn't really do a lot of duck hunting, but eventually we got into German short-haired pointers, and we loved those dogs. They were awesome. And just recently, well, not recently, but about 5 years ago, I got an English setter, and that was my first hunting dog. And so I got into grouse and woodcock hunting. So it's been about five seasons with
my
dog.
Deuce,
yep,
right
Deuce.
Before the podcast. Mm-hmm. And
yep, he's an awesome
great
dog.
Yep. That's a great dog. Yeah.
So,
well, cool.
Yeah.
How are things shaping up for the fall, do you think?
I think it's going to be good. I've heard a lot of drumming in the woods. I mean, we're on the river Monday through Thursday, so.
You get to do a little
recon
while you're out working.
Yes. Oh, for sure. We've seen a lot of woodcock this year, too. They just started flying, like the chicks, about 2 weeks ago.
Oh, good.
Stumbled across like six or seven.
Oh, that's
in one day, on our trail. So,
love that.
Yeah, and then I've heard more drumming this year than the last two, so I think it could be a better year. Coyotes, I think, are down. I don't know if that'll make a difference or not, but yeah, I think it's shaping up to be a good bird year.
Right on.
For sure. Coyotes are down.
That's what I think, yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know for sure on that, but that's just my opinion.
I've heard a couple of people postulate that. Yeah. I don't know how you prove it.
Well, we have them, you know, in this. Down in behind the house between us and the river, we get a lot of, we're not hearing as many as we ordinarily do. You know, usually it's, you get a lot of that.
We're kind of in the same boat. You know, I'm upstream from Richard, but normally at this time, at this point in the spring, summer, you'd get them doing roll call check-ins, and we're just not hearing it like we have in past summers. It's weird. So maybe that's encouraging for the birds.
Yeah, that could help.
Yeah. As long as the fox count's not up.
Yeah, or the hawks or other birds of prey.
Yeah.
The wolves have ate the coyotes.
Yeah, exactly. Well, in as much as you do have some good fly experience in the area, do you have a certain hatch that you favor over another?
The fabled hex hatch is always fun. I personally haven't fly fished a ton. My dad is definitely an avid fly fisherman and fly tier, so as a kid I would watch him, you know, tie flies, and I never had the patience for it. As a younger person, I was just chasing anything else, you know.
Oh, I get it.
But the older I get, the more I realize the fly fishing, the culture around it is awesome, the people you meet. But, I mean, I wanted to get into mousing at night, which isn't really a hatch, but once, like, the hex hatch is over.
But it's a hunt.
It's a hunt, for sure.
Well, the rat hatch.
The rat hatch.
The rat hatch.
They're falling out of trees. Yes.
Well, you know, when that concept was first introduced to me up here, it was just like, what?
Yeah.
And then you go out in your mouse and you're like, oh, yeah, okay.
I get it, yeah.
I've seen them even where
my dad's told a story where he was catching brown trout that had baby frogs pouring out of its mouth because there was a really heavy rain, and for some reason all of the tadpoles... There was like a big bloom of tadpoles turning into frogs, and these trout were just gorging themselves on
no
frogs.
Doubt.
Yeah, so it was really interesting to hear.
Still
that.
Time for one mouse though.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. They can't resist that big ripple in the water, that splash. It's just okay. And that's how you kind of bring them out of the cover, I think, too. Because like we talked earlier about, like you said, when you're tracking fish, they're deep undercover.
Yeah.
They're very hidden. So to get them to come out, I think, takes a large presentation sometimes.
It really does. Yeah. And you have the benefit too that, you know, that's a nocturnal pursuit, and you don't have the bright sun, you don't have the typical daytime predators. So
and we do have a new moon coming up, so that makes it even better. When it's the darker the night, the better it is.
You bet.
Yep.
Beavers will scare you a little bit every once in a while, but it's pretty fun. Yeah, to get one I was down on the south, very, very early on, this was 25, 30 years ago, and my first experience with a hex hatch, and standing out, and, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning, pitch dark, new moon, the whole 9 yards, and, you know, you just got bowling balls dropping in the water all around you, and had a beaver swim up between my legs, and it was just like, very, very surreal.
It didn't tail slap you, did it?
No, it didn't tail slap me, but
painful.
It definitely got my heart racing. It was like nobody told me about this.
Yeah, I had like 20-pound salmon swim between my legs, and that's similar. Like, whoa, what are you doing there?
That's spooky.
Take a quick ride.
Yeah.
Now, Logan, you're kind of on the other side of the spectrum. You're You've done a lot of smallie fishing, and actually, do you tournament fish?
Yeah, so I do a lot of tournaments. I sort of, I jumped into bass fishing tournaments. I was at the Novi Fishing Expo, and I saw some guys that had like the cool jerseys on, and they had the sponsorships.
The cool
jerseys.
I
was like, those are really cool, and I just went up and I asked them. I was with my dad, and I was like, how did you guys get those? And they're like, oh, well, we do tournaments, and we're in a club. And I was like, cool. And I joined the club.
I thought they were NASCAR.
Yeah.
I'm wearing smaller shirts too.
Well, some of those boats, it's like NASCAR. They go so fast.
Yeah.
Well, that's no really kidding.
Fast. Yeah.
But then it was like called the Glacier Lakes Bass Club, and I fished with, it was, you know, there's never more than 10 people at the tournaments. So I got to know some of the older guys really, really well, like Steve Emery. He's great angler. He used to be ranked in the world on St. Clair for smallmouth fishing. Craig Dahlin, Kevin Hogue, they owned a bait company at the time, and I made a good relationship with them, and they, you know, sold me a bunch of baits. I also learned, you know, how to upkeep a boat, how to run a boat, how to own a boat, how to tow a boat. All sorts of, I was really into the tournament stuff. I was really competitive. I'm also a pole vaulter at GVSU, so it's just, it's a tournament.
I find most athletes have that competition carry into their angling or their hunting.
So for me, it's like, all right, who can competitively catch the biggest five fish on the lake? Let's go. Let's find out. Like,
okay.
So it's either a fishing pole or a pole vault pole.
Yeah. Everything is,
the pole vault pole would be interesting. You could go out and dab really far away.
Right. Yeah, you can punch on a different
high powered 10 car. I am.
Yeah, exactly.
I learned a ton about tournament fishing from this real close group of guys. And got good at smallmouth fishing. I mean, I used to do a bunch of really stupid stuff. Like, I mean, I still do it too because it's fun. But I had this. We had a 16-foot flat bottom John boat, which I just recently rebuilt, and I still own and I fish out of. I did a whole rebuild on it, transom to paint to electrical wiring harness. But I built that, and I would fish out of that on St. Clair, on the Detroit River, on the St. Clair River, on Erie. I did a whole bunch of stuff. There was one tournament I was fishing, and there was guys, and I was going to the bathroom, and there was guys in there just talking trash about me, like, hey, this kid's going out in a 16-foot John boat. And I was like, yeah, that's me, thanks.
Yeah.
And I went out, and we still fished, and I didn't win, but I did good on the tournament.
Was it like a 1982?
Well, at least you know they're paying attention to you.
Oh, yeah. No, everybody knows me. I roll up, and it's the 1982 blue Alumacraft, and I stick out like a sore thumb, and I bring in fish. So
good for you. Well, what's the old saying? It's the archer, not the arrow.
Yeah. It's not the boat. Boat don't catch the fish. It is tough to compete with some of the new technology that comes out, like the live scope and the 360 stuff. It's like, I don't think it's really fishing. It's just playing a really expensive video game where you catch fish, but it's tough to compete with that stuff in tournaments.
Yeah,
well,
I can imagine.
Sort of a new type of competitiveness with those kind of boats.
It's a little bit different than wading and wondering which structure's gonna.
it's so different. They're very different sports. I can appreciate them both for what they are.
Oh, like for sure.
Bass are very easy to catch, but you know, can you catch easier fish to catch than I can catch that are bigger than the ones that I catch is what, you know, I want to know. But the fly fishing, I've just been introduced. I love the trout community. It's absolutely amazing. Everybody I've talked to, everybody I've learned from, and everybody I've interacted with in any sense that has anything to do with trout has been almost a surreal experience. And I can really appreciate the community. I really like everyone.
You've got to have him over and do docent. At the museum.
We'll do
your immersive learning real quick.
You like to talk and tell people things. That's one and two on the list of docent talents.
Yes. Okay. Well, you get your immersion in further into the trout community and
local history, like
sure. Mm. Well, not a, you know, and you know, golly, we're pretty fortunate to have an extensive. For the little wood building in the woods, we've got a pretty nice library. Some pretty cool artifacts too. So, but there's our shameless plug for the podcast. Come visit us at the museum, won't you?
If you want to see any of that stuff, you got to come.
Yeah, exactly. So, Hunter, what's the future hold for you? What's your kind of vision your working vision, as it were?
Right. Well, I mean, right now, this past semester, I just finished up my associates at community college here at Kirtland, close to home. And that was something that I'd put off for a long time because of work and trying to make money.
Sure.
And not really knowing any direction after high school. It was just like, you know what, I might as well work.
Full respect.
Yeah, it's just what worked out for me, but... Yeah, recently got back into school, finished up the Associates in General Sciences, which is transferable to most colleges in the state, and I'll be going to Lake Superior State University in Sault Ste. Marie in the fall for the Fish and Wildlife Management Program.
Right on.
Yep.
Congratulations.
So, thank you. Yeah, that's the plan.
That's awesome.
So far.
But in my path was similar. I was not the high school to college right away. Well, I did go first year and found out that I was... not college material,
right.
Or at least not that college's material.
No, I didn't see myself that way either, so it was like better off working.
I went to the University of Lackland.
Yeah, there you go. The Well, cool. I know you'll be successful.
Yeah, I hope so. And I'm really looking forward to learning about the Atlantic salmon stocking that they're doing, because it's extensive, and they have a lot of really good equipment in their hatchery on campus, and they have had a very successful stocking effort of Atlantic salmon. I mean, I've personally caught them out of Lake Huron with my boat, and I'll go out there, and you can look at the fin clips. They're very, very specific on making sure they do the right fin clips for each year, so you can find out, okay, this fish was stocked at a certain place this year if it had, say, the right pectoral fin or the adipose fin, depending on the year class they do that. So I mean, it's really cool because like I've caught those fish over the past like 5-6 years when I found out that there was an opportunity the northeast side
and
of Michigan.
Know about it.
Yeah, like, now that I'll be able to talk to them about like the fish that I've caught, and I'm really looking forward to it.
Cracked the code. Cool. That's pretty cool.
Sure. I want to see the whole process. Cool. Yeah. So the fact that that college offers such a hands-on learning experience is what. And everyone that talks about fish and wildlife, they say, go to Lake Superior State. They have a excellent program, low teacher-to-student ratio, too, which I really am looking forward to. You get a lot more hands-on with each professor, and it's very direct.
It's wonderful that we have that resource because, while we have an abundance of, lakes and rivers, it's Michigan's, I think, for a lot of people, not top of mind thinking Lake Superior State, and an amazing program.
Yeah.
An amazing program. The one of the other organizations locally, the North Branch Area Foundation, along with the anglers and a few other organizations, are funding efforts to put these little mayfly stations in that are all being, all that data is being collated out of Lake Superior State. And it's really, really cool. Gets into a little bit of your ArcGIS stuff.
I actually just recently, on the Two-Hearted River, I spent some time fishing up there in the spring for the steelhead run, but they put in a gauge, LSSU did, near one of the places I fished, and I noticed like they had a solar panel set up for the power, and it's like, wow, and they have a big placard up there, like, this is for LSSU, please don't mess with it, and I'm like, you know, they're doing a lot of really cool stuff like that.
Well, and it's selfishly for cold water conservation groups, it's a lot more affordable solution.
Yeah.
As opposed to a USGS solution, which might run $37,000 on the front side for install, and then, upwards of $15,000-$17,000 a year for upkeep and maintenance. And here we have now these mayfly gauges. That can do the ET call home thing through the solar cell, and it's enabling a lot more granular data collection because you can put more of them out.
Yeah. So when you say mayfly gauges, like,
I think that's the brand name.
Okay.
It's a gauge that is capable of doing flow, height, and temperature.
Oh, okay.
So you get some good baseline information. And again, thinking about your structure work and the other groundwater, variables here, it's pretty neat to see all these different components.
It all works together.
Yeah.
And that's like with Logan and I too, like he's obviously looking for fish and I'm putting in structure, so like the way that correlates and us just meeting recently is really cool.
Yeah,
to be able to share information with each other is awesome.
There's definitely a great dynamic that goes on between you and I, between the communication of like what I'm finding the fish are liking and what you're building, and I'm figuring out why they're using it, and you're saying why you're building it, and at the same time, the correlate there. It's a great dynamic and a great.
Well, there's some validation involved, and
and we can certainly learn from each other and grow from each other in that sense too, because we're on the same purpose. We're just doing it from a different angle, and it's.
Well, and one of the cooler things from where I'm sitting is that spirit of collaboration, because I think historically some of this information's been siloed, and it's like, this group's not talking to that group, or these two groups are, fussing with each other or whatever. And now it's like, hey, there's a heck of a lot to be gained if we all talk and share.
It's
and,
like, yeah, put yeah. the politics
go
aside.
For the, yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not about
go
money.
For the common good.
Yeah.
It's
for the fish.
Thank
it's
you.
For the
well,
river.
Art Newman said it rather well. Take care of of the fish, and the fishing will take care of itself. Mm-hmm. And as simplistic as it sounds, it's, you know, pretty deep and profound, actually, you know, especially given the work you're doing. So, Logan, what about you? What's your next chapter look like?
In terms of where I'm headed or jobs?
Well, hopefully it looks like, you know, maybe another summer up here with some grant.
I would really like to come back up here. I'm so grateful that the Anglers of the Ossabals and many other groups that have donated towards the funding of my internship being up here. I'm exceptionally grateful for that opportunity to be up here, and I'm really looking forward to hopefully being able to come back and do it next year as a graduate student. I'd love to pursue my master's from an educational standpoint, and I'd love to pursue it from a personal standpoint for achievement and just growth, because I was never a good student in high school or middle school or anything like that, and now I've become a decent student, and I like to think I'm somewhat of a nerd.
but I think that it speaks to you found the thing that resonates with you, and you're able to show your prowess in excel.
I'm able to study and learn and learn about these fish, and I really enjoy it, and I can't separate when I'm working from when I'm learning and from when I'm just having a good time. Up here is just, it's fantastic, you know. It's never like work. It's just, I'm here to take care of the fish and learn about them and grow. And it's awesome. And if I can come back and do it another year and a year after that, I'm here for it.
There you go. Right on. Well, what's, in terms of, you know, hopefully some of our younger listeners will hear both of you talk about your experiences and, you know, how you've kind of found your groove and realize that, you know, there's a really cool option. This was never, you know, I'm sure you were the same way, Richard. It's like your guidance counselor didn't say, you know, fisheries biology, that'd be pretty cool. It's like, no, it's just like, you got to go, you know.
I think they had me slated as either a car thief or a repeat offender.
Yeah, we must have had the same guidance counselor, yeah.
But the world needs ditch diggers, too.
Yeah, well, you know.
More than ever.
Had I not stumbled into IT, I think I probably would still be humping furniture in a warehouse. So it's fun when you find your passion and can expand. So congratulations, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Thank you both very much for joining us this week. Richard?
Yeah, just one added note. We were joined here today by Jeff and Kelly. That was Logan's parents who were here visiting. And today we had a peanut gallery. So.
Yeah, and occasionally we have a studio audience. Yeah. So. Jeff, Kelly, thank you much.
Thank you.
You've done a great job.
Thank you, guys, and you're doing a great job in the shop.
Yeah, it's all good. So keep doing the great stuff, and, you know, as they say at the end of the show, mind your back cast.
Well, that's a couple of neat young men, and obviously having fun with their summer and with their education, so more power to them. Let's see. We've got... the rest of the season looking down the throat at us, so we'll be with you through the end of September, through traditional trout season. The museum will be open from 11 a.m. until 3 p.m. each Saturday until the end of the season. And in the interim, we'll be putting out some more podcasts for you to enjoy. So thanks for sticking with us. We hope you enjoy it. And tell a friend. We love new listeners. Take care now.